Hello, it's Thursday 17th of September. I'm Hannah Pearson from Per Anderson.
And I'm Gary Bowerman from Check In Asia.
On this week's show, we're looking ahead at the final travel quarter of 2020 and asking, what's the best we can hope for in Southeast Asia?
Yes, it's mid-September and we should be gearing up for an October Chinese Golden Week burst and then a late year tourism surge. But this year, sadly, Hannah, we're clutching at straws.
We are.
So let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. As we're nearing the end of Q3 already this year, and with just 99 days till Christmas, that's your first official reminder, we thought we'd look at what's the best, realistically, Southeast Asia can achieve in the final 3 months of 2020.
So, Hannah, just before we start, the reason we're in this situation is the coronavirus.
Yes.
So let's just take a stock of where we're at. We're almost 9 months through the year. Let's have a look at where we are. So in terms of total cases across Southeast Asia, the 10 countries of Southeast Asia, up until yesterday, there were a total of 578,105 confirmed cases.
Gosh.
Of those, 501,927 were in just two countries, Indonesia and the Philippines.
Yeah.
Some better news, though. Currently, there's only 120,000 active cases.
Okay.
And 443,600 people have recovered from the virus.
All right, that's
across the region,
news.
Which is a pretty high rate. So the current concerns, I guess, obviously are still Indonesia and Philippines. Yeah. Myanmar is rising quite fast.
Yeah.
It's rising at around about 300 plus cases per day.
Yeah.
Struggling to control that. Indonesia seems to be breaking its record quite regularly. I think it's three times its month it's broken its total cases. But also its recovery rate is improving as well. So there are mixed messages.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like we were always saying, it's a two-speed Southeast Asia, isn't it? You've got quite a few countries where this thing is under control, and that now includes Vietnam, who have got over the second wave, it seems, and have gone days without community transmission there now. And you've got these other countries, Philippines, Indonesia, like you say, Myanmar, that's growing, where it does seem to be... They're really fighting, aren't they? They're really fighting to keep it under control.
Yeah, two speeds, absolutely right. If you look at the four countries that are right at the bottom of the list, Vietnam, Cambodia, Brunei, and Laos, between them, they have a total of 1,500 cases only.
Yeah.
That's total across the last few months.
Yeah, that's really impressive.
And 38 deaths. It's not very much at all. Most of those are in Vietnam. So let's start our tour through Southeast Asia, Hannah. And where are we going to start first?
We have to start with Thailand, don't we? Good old Thailand. Thailand's always got something new to talk about every week.
There's plenty to say.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's talk about the bigger news story that came out this week, which is that the Thai cabinet has approved the special tourist visa. So the special tourist visa was up to last week, we were still calling the Phuket plan. It's now renamed, it's rebranded. It's the special tourist visa. So details are still not really finalized. And as far as we know, it's still not final. Cabinet's approved it, but I think there are still more approvals to go through. But it looks like it will be a 90-day visa. You'll be able to renew it twice, so that takes you up to about 270 days. And it's really aimed at those long-stay visitors. Now, tourists will still need to do a 14-day quarantine, so it's not really going to be open, I think, for all leisure travellers, but particularly just aimed at those kind of ones who want to escape, want to live in another country with very low COVID levels. And they're expecting about 1,200 visitors per month from it, aren't they?
The interesting thing about that is, you know, they've set these figures. I think they said, 14,000 over the year of this first term of this product.
Mm.
And that all visitors will have to come in on charter flights.
Yes.
So if it's going to be 1,200 per month,
You've
got to set those charter flights up from specific destinations, from specific countries. So you're going to have to work with charter operators, tour operators, I guess, in those countries to bring those people in. You've got to look at where the demand will be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are we looking at long-haul demand? Are we looking at the European market to kick this off? Are we looking... I mean, Asian markets, the borders are still closed and doesn't seem to be a great deal of movement.
Yeah, I mean, and I can't imagine that such a long stay would be popular for at least Southeast Asian visitors. I don't think so. Maybe if you're talking others, if they did open up to countries like China, we'll talk about that in a minute, perhaps Chinese tourists would be more interested in spending that longer period of time in Thailand. Otherwise, it does very much look like it's geared towards Western markets and these winter birds, you know, these pensioners who want to go and stay abroad for the winter season and enjoy the sun.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm not convinced that the Chinese market would under those circumstances. I guess the issue at the moment is that the number of places people can travel to is so narrow that if there's an opportunity and you have the money and the time to go, then Thailand is at least throwing open the doors.
Yes.
But would you rather go to Maldives?
I mean, I guess if it's a longer stay and you are they may well target those kind of people who are in countries that have huge numbers of COVID. Because let's say you're stuck in the UK. I'll use UK as an example. you know, cases are really rising there. Let's say you're retired. You don't really fancy having to self-isolate in your house for the entire winter season. Why not then, right? Maybe you want to go to another country, you get some sunshine, you can be out, you can see people, you're not stuck in your house, and you just have to go through a 2-week quarantine. But essentially, you're already doing that kind of 2-week isolation thing in your place in the UK anyway. It's not going to be that much of a difference. You just get to do it in a nice hotel.
That maybe strikes me as where this would, in the shorter term, have the impact because of the European winter.
Yeah.
The timing seems to be set up for that. I don't know whether the timing is actually just coincidental, that they've actually put this together. And
you know, it
doesn't seem to be a huge amount of planning across this whole thing.
No.
But the fact of where it is set up in terms of the timing, just before the European winter, that would have to be the primary negotiating tool to try and bring charter flights in.
So I'm fairly confident, actually, that this will come through. I do think we will see this before the end of the year in some shape or form. I mean, like I said, they haven't confirmed the start date yet, maybe October. And of course, like you say, they've got to coordinate with tour operators. They've got to do coordinating with airlines to find these chartered flights in the first place. So there's still quite a lot of planning that needs to go on. But I reckon that this will happen.
Yeah, I think the looming problem, which the media in Thailand has been talking about today, is the public reaction.
Yeah.
You know, how will Thai people feel about charter flights coming back into the country? It had been sold to them. It was only Phuket.
Yes.
That may not be the case now.
Yeah. I mean, we saw news articles coming out last week saying that this might actually be spread nationwide. We haven't really seen anything about that this week, exactly which areas these special tourist visas are going to apply to, but presumably only those areas where chartered flights could fly in.
Yeah.
Interesting one.
Yeah. So looking forward to the final quarter of the year. Well, the final quarter of the year always kicks off with the Chinese October National Week holiday, the first week of October.
Yeah.
It is always a huge period for domestic travel.
Yeah.
Now, it's often overblown a little bit about how important it is for outbound. Somewhere last year, about 7 million outbound trips.
Okay.
It's not a huge amount. It does bring travellers into the region.
Yeah.
It's a concentrated period for doing that. But if you look at the overall numbers, that's not huge.
Yeah.
Not compared to the domestic numbers. Last year, there were 782 million domestic trips made during that 1 week alone.
Yeah.
This year, the holiday is quite interesting because it actually overlaps with the Mid-Autumn Festival. So actually, it's an 8-day public holiday. But there is, the media are talking this up, that a lot of people may take extra days and have 2 weeks holiday.
Yeah.
So they can travel further and wider, but only in China.
Yes.
I think the one thing that we're going to find out from this week, you know, the Chinese media has really been talking this up, and they've been talking about suppressed demand and that people are really simmering to travel. But I think we'll really find out a number of clues about how far they're prepared to go within their own country. Their own country is a continent, let's remember. It's a huge country. So there's all sorts of travel opportunities. How many people will take flights? How many people will take rail? How many will self-drive? Will there be family trips? Will there be group trips?
Yeah.
I think we'll actually find out a lot in terms of the gauge of where Chinese travel is actually at this point in time.
Yeah.
That doesn't obviously tell us what the government is going to do in terms of opening the borders. But obviously, this could be a huge boost for the Chinese economy because it's keeping all of that travel within, possibly for a 2 week period.
Exactly. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see and then apply that, like you say, to could this be how they're going to behave when they travel internationally? And perhaps governments here in Southeast Asia should then be looking at those kind of patterns and trying to match that also with their strategies going forward for 2021 as well. You know, whether it's going to be realistic to expect large groups, or is it more going to be people traveling in private family groups? Are they booking via travel agents, like you said? Are they booking directly online? All of these things are going to have a massive role to play, I think, in forming the strategy for Southeast Asia and kind of inbound tourism next year.
I totally agree. And the length of trips as well. I mean, this one we won't probably get that figure in terms of length of trip for international trips going forward.
Yeah.
Because people will probably take longer trips domestically than they will if they're going internationally, particularly for the first time after the coronavirus.
Yeah. So if we go to the opposite of Thailand now, we stay within Southeast Asia, and look at Malaysia, the country where Gary and I are both living at the minute. And so Malaysia is almost the opposite of Thailand. So Thailand, we've got these indications that the door is starting to open. In Malaysia, it's kind of the opposite, isn't it? So what did the PM say in an address this week?
Yeah, a surprise address on the eve of Malaysia Day, which was on Wednesday. The Prime Minister was very austere, and his phrase that he quoted, I think twice, was, "We are not opening the borders anytime soon." His message was that there are a number of clusters that are emerging, both in the peninsula and in East Malaysia. Now, these clusters are relatively small, but he is worried about them getting out of control because there's so many of them. They tend to be, as we said, they tend to be quite small. His concern was that people's discipline in terms of hygiene and actually keeping distance in big numbers has started to drop a little bit. There's this sort of COVID fatigue stepping in, although most people still do wear masks. We have to be honest about that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Mask wearing is 99%, I would say, of most people. Yeah. But there is this concern that, you know, this could spread within the country, as you're seeing in Myanmar, as we saw in Vietnam.
Yeah.
There has been no restrictions put on domestic travel at the moment.
No.
One ferry to the island of Langkawi has been suspended for a couple of weeks, but that's only because its departure point is near one of the clusters in Kedah. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, there are no restrictions in traveling, particularly within the peninsula. There are some restrictions between traveling East Malaysia to the peninsula. But it does seem as though this whole strategy now is to stamp out the virus within the borders, but what happens after that?
Yep, we don't know. I think they are just waiting until the end of the year. So, you know, in terms of what international travel can we expect for Malaysia? Zero, I imagine. Well, the little amounts that they have from Singapore, and I would imagine perhaps they might strike up another travel corridor with another Southeast Asian country. Perhaps Thailand might make sense as another neighbour, or Brunei. But I don't think they're going to be opening up borders to anybody else. The only possible one that I could see is, and this is becoming more of a faint possibility now, is opening up the borders slightly more to Singapore. So they currently let essential business travel in. They have this kind of arrangement, periodic commuting arrangement, they call, for Singaporeans and Malaysians working in each other's country, that they can come back after 3 months and visit the other one. But it's all very, very tightly controlled, tightly regulated. Perhaps we will see it being opened up a bit more. But I'm not even sure at this point that it will even be open for those kind of daily commuters that Johor and Singapore are really hoping for. I can't see that happening right now.
No, the message from the Prime Minister's address was very strict and very clear. Mm. That there isn't going to be much movement for the rest of the year.
So move on to Malaysia's neighbour. We were just talking about Singapore.
Yeah, well, Singapore keeps using this term progressively, that it's trying to set up different agreements. I think it's up to six now. Is it six countries that has agreements, these fast track or business track agreements for essential business travel, students? There's one or two that are general short-term travel, but again, if you read the restrictions, they're pretty tight.
Yeah.
I think those are in place with Brunei and New Zealand. Mm. So there's six countries. Japan is going to be added to the list, I think, tomorrow.
Yep.
So there is some movement there.
Yes.
But it is very slow. It's very gradual. I guess we have to get used to this. This is the way things are going to open over the next few months, or not open.
Yes, I do see them adding more though. I think in the next quarter, I think they are at least going about it in a smart way. They realise they can't
predictions?
Be.
Come on, give us some predictions.
Who? Hong Kong. I think they'll open up to Hong Kong. So they've already been talking about Thailand, I think, is another key one. I mean, I would say Australia and New Zealand, but I just don't think Australia and New Zealand would open up to Singapore. I think Singapore would be pretty keen to do there. But I can't see it being so much reciprocated.
As it stands at the moment, both Australia and New Zealand are saying they're not going to open their borders. Well, Australia's till the 17th of December. That's a hard deadline. New Zealand doesn't seem to have actually set a deadline.
No.
But I would think that Singapore would be one of the first countries they will deal with when they are looking to, even if it's only on a state-by-state, Australia looks like it will definitely be a state-by-state basis. Mm-hmm. I would think Singapore will definitely be a high priority.
And especially because it's a transit hub as well, isn't it? For a lot of Australian and New Zealand travellers who are travelling to other places, a lot transit through Singapore.
Yeah. And my feeling also is that Australians, a lot come into the region, a lot obviously tend to go to Bali and to Indonesia, but a lot of Australians do go to Singapore.
Yeah.
And I think with Australians, if you know they're feeling a bit of cabin fever, they may just even take a short break in Singapore without going any further.
Yeah, you're right. So, I mean, domestically, I mean, that's internationally. So there's some movement. We do think that there'll still be some more. Domestically, of course, they're limited, aren't they? They're very much limited by the fact that there's not very many places you can go if you are going on a domestic holiday in Singapore. So the government this week, they had announced it a few weeks ago, is these releasing domestic tourism vouchers called Singapore Rediscovers vouchers. But this week they finally released the mechanism behind that. So these will be $100 vouchers that are released to Singaporeans over the age of 18. They will be used from December, and apparently they chose December because they wanted to be able to spread out the demand with March, June and December holidays that are coming up in 2020 and 2021. They will be used to offset attractions and hotel stays. But it's quite interesting because they've actually said, as to the exact extent of the catalytic effect, it will be a bit hard to predict at this point in time, but we hope it's at least a few times what we have provided for in the budget. I mean, the budget is 320 million Sing dollars. To me, it's a little bit strange that they have. I mean, of course, it's hard to forecast these things, but you would hope that they had a little bit more science behind it than just saying, I hope we get a few times the return.
Yeah. I guess one of the aspects that we have to look at, and we discussed this on the pod last week, or was it the week before, in our Vaccine or Bust podcast, which has been really well received, that we're not just really looking now at the final quarter of this year. Mm. Countries are going to start planning for when there is potentially a vaccine available.
Yeah.
And I do have this feeling that the leaders in this region for doing that will be Singapore and Vietnam.
Mm.
That's just my gut feeling, is that they're going to start putting things in place during the fourth quarter to hopefully unlock the gates a little bit next year when there's a vaccine. Now, there are loads of issues that come with the vaccine. We know that. We don't know if everybody's going to take it. We don't know how quickly people will get it. We don't even know if it will work. There are a lot of things there.
Yeah.
But governments do have to plan for the fact that there may be a vaccine that is usable.
Yes.
I have a feeling Singapore is doing that, and I have a feeling Vietnam will do that too.
Yeah. So Vietnam next, then, as we segue into that. That's a nice segue. And I think you're right. We are seeing, you know, similarly to Singapore, Vietnam is also kind of creaking open that door.
And then closing it again.
But maybe partly opening it. It's a little bit confusing, essentially, isn't it? So the government had announced that flights to six countries would be permitted. So Japan, China, South Korea and Taiwan from the 15th of September, Laos and Cambodia from the 22nd of September. But obviously, the 15th of September has now passed. There were no international flights. Vietnam Airlines announced that they will start one-way flights from Vietnam to Japan from the 18th. And it seems like the government has just given permission to the Transport Ministry for these flights to begin. So I think the big question here is, tomorrow, will they actually, will there be a flight from Vietnam to Japan?
Vietnam, to me, seems like it holds a lot of cards in its hand.
Mm.
It's got a very, very low rate across the last few months.
Mm.
It had those outbreaks from Da Nang, which actually spread to other cities. Yeah. Managed to stamp those out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
It's got a big population. People are traveling domestically. Mm. Big outbound population. Huge opportunities for inbound travel.
Yeah.
It holds a lot of cards in terms of leveraging negotiations with other countries. Mm. It's just, which countries will it do it with, and when will it do it?
Yes.
Singapore. I think Vietnam and Singapore are going to come together or something here.
Yeah, you're right, actually. That was one that I guessed, but that would make sense. Absolutely. But interestingly, that they're not restarting a flight to there. That's not on their list of six initial countries. But yeah, I do get the feeling things are moving, and I think we will see these six countries, the commercial flights. I mean, it's still important to note that this is still very much for limited people. It's not anybody in those countries can come in. But it's a good start.
Yeah. I think we're looking perhaps for the second quarter of next year, but I think we'll start seeing some plans put in place for charter flights.
Mm.
Because the economists just are going to really need them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the airlines are not going to survive without them. They're not going to survive another two quarters without any traffic. It's impossible.
Even, you know, with the domestic travel in Vietnam at the levels that it is and increasing, they can't sustain it. They still need the international flights to be able to keep going.
So we have hopes for Vietnam. We're just not quite sure how that will pan out.
Yes.
So let's be positive in that. Yes. Which brings us to our next country, which we don't have such great hopes for, I'm afraid, and that's Indonesia, which is really struggling with the virus. It's yo-yoing on its restrictions. Jakarta this week had more restrictions put in place. The case numbers in Bali and the death rate in Bali is going up.
Yeah.
It doesn't look a good picture.
No, it isn't. And you've got confusing requirements as well for domestic travel. So we had these rapid tests that were a requirement, and the health ministry said, oh no, you don't need to use them. And then the transportation ministry said, yes, you do. And it seems like some of these rapid tests, and we were talking about this on the pod last week, with the hugely inaccurate rates as well, kind of contributed to this increase in cases in Bali, although the government has not said that that's what experts have been saying based on the figures and things. It's hard to see how domestic tourism is going to increase in the next quarter, I think, with these additional restrictions back on in Jakarta. Obviously, Jakartans are, you know, one of the biggest spenders, I think, across the country, one of the largest populations to travel out from the city as well. This is going to have a big impact not only on Jakarta, but on the whole of Indonesia as well.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think one of the things that we've definitely learned from COVID is just what a difficult country Indonesia is to govern.
Yes.
Very, very difficult. And, you know, our sympathies, and we really hope that they can sort this out, because I want to go back to Indonesia soon. But yeah, it's a very difficult situation. Had to give up on Bali, reopening to international travel. Yeah. That was a recognition that, you know, the case numbers were just too high, that nobody would come.
Yeah.
Local travelers have been going to Bali, but you wonder now with the cases going up whether that will curtail.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks a difficult situation.
Yeah, I mean, and even in terms of travel agreements, they were doing pretty well in August. They got agreements with China, UAE, South Korea. I would think with this growing case numbers now, it's going to be very difficult to convince other countries to finalize agreements with them.
And increasingly you see in the media that they are trying to do more deals to get vaccine doses. They already have two in place, one with the Chinese company, one with the UAE company.
Yeah.
It was reported in the media today that they're looking at AstraZeneca in the UK, looking at Moderna, I think, and eight others. So they're really looking at bringing in as much as they can, as quickly as they can.
Yeah.
I guess that's the only way they can control it from here.
Yeah. We'll move on to another archipelago nation now, the Philippines.
Yep, Philippines, while also struggling with the virus itself, they've had these many problems very similarly in terms of restrictions between different islands, different cities. Yep. It's been a very confused picture. They have been doing a lot of testing. The death rate is relatively low in terms of the total case numbers, but it's just stamping out the virus.
Yeah, I mean, some domestic tourism opportunities have been very, very limited. They now have come out and said that staycations will now be permitted in areas under general community quarantine. And of course, Manila is still under this GCQ status at the moment, but that it's all subject to this local government unit approval. And as we have seen in the past, this LGU approval, as they call it, is very difficult to come by. In theory, most of the Philippines right now could be open to domestic tourism because it is under modified general community quarantine, which under the regulations means that they can have domestic tourism. It is just that the local government units are stopping that from happening.
Yeah.
Whether people do go and book staycations, whether staycations will actually be permitted in these cities, remains to be seen.
Yeah, and it has so many beautiful islands, paradise islands, which could be used as small charter flight destinations. The problem with the Philippines is its accessibility. You tend to have to go through the major hubs to get to wherever you're going. Which means if you want to be secluded on one of the beautiful islands, you still have to go through one of the major hub points.
Yeah. And the economy is also taking a real battering at the moment as well. So the Asian Development Bank came out with a revised GDP outlook. And between their September to June forecasts, it's now dropped down to minus 7.3%, their GDP prediction, from only minus 3.8%. Their forecast was last in June. So it's not looking good economically either in the Philippines.
No, that's an astounding thing. Because actually the economic growth in recent years has been pretty strong in the Philippines. It's been growing quite fast. Yeah. I mean, obviously it's coming off a lower base than some of the other countries, but it has been growing quite fast.
Yeah, I think the only kind of ray of light there is that they say that the worst is over now.
Right.
So it is up from here,
yeah,
but still a pretty gloomy down.
Absolutely. Which brings us to Myanmar.
Mm.
Now, one of the problems that Myanmar has many problems, but one of the problems it has at the moment is this rising case rate and the fear factor. You're starting to see the fear factor across the country.
Yeah.
You know, I think in Yangon last week, people were barricading streets to keep other people out. You know, because it's come so late in the day,
yeah,
you know, they've been relatively COVID safe for most of this year.
Yeah.
this late surge is starting to worry people. The economy is really struggling. Things are not looking too good there.
No, and of course, domestic tourism has now been banned as well. Yeah. So whatever fledgling growth was starting to happen there again has just been wiped out.
Yeah.
So they're essentially going to have to start probably from zero again, I think. It doesn't look good, I don't think, for Myanmar in Q4.
No, it really doesn't. It's going to be, well, it's applying for aid funding from the institutions. China said last week in Chinese media that it would actually prioritize Myanmar for a vaccine, probably on the back of some loan or grant funding as well.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a difficult road back for the Myanmar economy.
And then hopping across to Cambodia. So Cambodia, I mean, it's a funny country, isn't it? Because in theory, it is partly open. I mean, they've got a lot of conditions and things. Not least, it was their $3,000 deposit that you had to pay. They've kind of made a quiet U-turn about that and made it $2,000, only $2,000 right. USD now. They are still encouraging international tourists to visit. So the Ministry of Tourism came out last week and he was urging international travellers not to cancel their trips. So they clearly do want tourists in. It's still not really materialising into international arrivals.
Yeah, well, it's hard to materialise when nobody in the region can really travel. Yeah. I mean, that's the main problem, isn't it? If you open the doors, yes. Bali found this. If you try to open the doors, nobody can come in.
True.
Thailand, we don't know how that's going to work out yet. Cambodia is doing that too.
Yeah.
Again, is it going to rely on a bit of European market to bring in some charter flights? I don't know. But that seems to be the only way things would move.
Yeah. So, I mean, their domestic tourism is increasing a little bit. They are seeing gains there, and they're hoping between now and the end of the year they might be able to generate $500,000 to $1 million dollars in tourism revenue. But overall, they reckon they've lost about $5 billion in revenue. So
and they only made $6 billion in the whole of last year. Is that right?
I think so. Yeah. So yeah, that's not really going to go particularly far. But they've got another long holiday weekend at the moment. So it'll be interesting to see what effect that has on domestic tourism arrivals and how else they can stimulate it for the rest of the quarter.
I guess the one country we haven't mentioned is Brunei, which has basically sort of isolated itself from most of the region throughout this period. It has a very low, it had a surge of cases at the beginning, but it seems to have been COVID-free.
Yeah.
For a long time now. I mean, the only things that we really know about it are that, you know, there's this general travel agreement with Singapore.
Yeah.
Malaysia this week announced that the figures of arrivals from Brunei to Malaysia, which are usually very, very strong, had collapsed in the first half of the year, but you would expect
Obviously.
Brunei, I've been reading through Brunei media, they're not really making any statements or moves about any opportunities for travel. They're looking at domestic travel. They're really trying to promote, they built this bridge, this Temburong bridge.
Oh, yeah.
So they're really trying to promote domestic travel to the rainforest areas.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like they're actually making much other moves at the moment.
And I suppose Laos, which is the only missing country from ASEAN. So even Laos is doing very well in containing the cases. I think they've only got 22 or 23 cases, something like that, in total, which is really impressive. But even the deputy tourism minister last week admitted that domestic tourism isn't really growing. They're having issues there. They're launching a new campaign, Laos Visit Laos. I think they're pinning their hopes on that. They're definitely not planning to open up to international tourists anytime. I think they're definitely pursuing a kind of shut borders policy right now. I think their only hope is to try and grow that domestic tourism in the last quarter. And I think they're waiting for the vaccine and waiting for things to settle.
Yeah. My impression for Laos is that it is a prime candidate for the vaccine. Chinese media this week reported that the tunnel, the underground tunnel linking Laos and China for this new railway that they're building, was actually completed, the underground tunnel part. And the railway is supposed to go into operations towards the end of next year.
Interesting, yeah.
So at the moment, it comes from Kunming, which is in Yunnan province, but obviously that connects to the rest of China's high-speed railway network and will go through, basically runs a straight line through Laos.
Yeah.
In future, that may go to other countries, but at the moment, it's just Laos. And this is very much seen as a pilot opportunity to bring travellers into Laos.
Yeah.
So you'd imagine that, you know, when China produces a vaccine, Laos will be very high on that list.
Definitely. So we asked the question to some of our followers on LinkedIn and asked them, what is the best that we can hope for the rest of the year. And we had a few replies, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Donald Lowe, who's retail and distribution for Skyroam in Singapore, he says that tourism supports local commerce, local entertainment industry, transport, air travel, job creations, and many more related industries, including public opinion on how well the government manages this pandemic. By the last leg of the year, most countries will want to recover their economy, or at least scrap what they can to close the year, reopen borders to as many less risky countries as they can, get the vaccine, or at least do something to reduce COVID cases. This year's presents from Santa, more masks.
I like that.
Even when this is over, I'm sure there will be others just like this in the past. Tourism will change, be more resilient, but things will never be the same again.
So Guy Allison, co-founder at GMP Recruitment based in Thailand, says, unfortunately, I think opening will be more like early 2021 in Thailand. This will come too late for resorts in Phuket and Samui, missing a lot of high season also. Right now, I'm unsure, will we ever see travel back to the way it was before? Comes a time where you just have to draw a line in the sand.
So. Yep. And Raymond Chan, director of Southeast Asia at the Hong Kong Tourism Board, says, hopefully some travel bubble arrangements for leisure travellers. Now, wouldn't that be great?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's have a holiday.
So, Gary, what do you think the best we can expect for 2020 is?
Well, you know me, Hannah, I'm generally quite pessimistic. Mm. As we've discussed today, I think the best we can hope for is some limited, more business track arrangements.
Yeah.
We'll see what Vietnam and Singapore can pull together. But I think mostly now it's planning for next year. I think we just probably have to accept that.
Yeah.
Vaccine or bust.
Vaccine or bust. Yeah.
We've got to hope that during the Christmas holidays we see a bit of a surge in domestic travel. Mm-hmm. I think we will in Malaysia for sure. Yeah. I mean, one of the interesting things we've seen with domestic travel is that obviously it can't support the tourism industry to the full extent. Yeah. It's just not capable of doing that. Most people tend to travel at weekends and public holidays.
Yeah.
But people are still running up leave. They still have leave to use for the rest of the year. They haven't spent the money they may have saved for their international holiday. So, I think towards the end of this year, we will start to see a little bit of, not necessarily a splurge, but I think we'll see a boost in most of the countries.
Yeah.
But where that takes us in terms of supporting the industry, supporting the airlines, supporting the tour operators, the travel agents, I'm not sure. And yourself?
Me? Well, I'll try and take a slightly less gloomy note, but it's hard not to right now, isn't it? But like you say, I'm also quite bullish that I think a lot more travel arrangements will be set up, particularly with Singapore leading the way. But, you know, I think Thailand hasn't really forged any of these travel arrangements yet, so there's still something to play around with them there. And I do think that we're going to see this Thailand special tourist visa scheme take off. I don't think it would be in October, but at least by the end of the year, I'm pretty bullish that will be happening. And you never know, we might just see Vietnam opening up, not necessarily for leisure, but certainly to more countries, and potentially without quarantines as well, because they've already started to take those steps. For people who are on a shorter stay, that might just be expanded to those kind of safer countries.
Mm.
So,
my only feeling about if they do that, if you reduce the quarantine requirement, you're going to have to put a very strict cap on numbers.
Mm. True. So then it becomes a, which do you prefer? Can't have everything. So that brings us to the end of this week's Q4 preview podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. And as always, we'd love to read your feedback on what we said or missed out. So please email us at hello@theseatravelshow.com or contact us on Facebook at The SEA Travel Show. And look out for our daily travel insights and podcast news on LinkedIn, at The Southeast Asia Travel Show, and on Twitter at SEA Travel Show.
Yeah, meanwhile, you can catch up with all of our 40 previous episodes. We've hit 40. Mm. 35 episodes of the Southeast Asia Travel Show and 5 editions of the Friday Rewind Show on our website, www.theseatravelshow.com, or on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Podchaser, and Stitcher. Just search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show on each one.
So that's a wrap for this week. We'll be back next week with the Midweek Podcast and the Friday Rewind Show. And we look forward to talking Southeast Asian travel and tourism again with you very soon.
Yeah, bye-bye.